Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster. You can call me Johnny. My guest today is an author, speaker, and a coach with one very specific goal. It's to help your business be better off than it was before you found him. This is a super interesting and entertaining conversation that covers positioning, the sunk cost fallacy, and evaluating new business ideas. Now, let's hack Kai Davis. Let me ask you a question. How many emails do you have in your inbox right now? 100? Probably not. 1,000? 20,000? 20,000 would be impressive. I know when I started using Sanebox, I had 6,200 and some odd number. But I mean, if your inbox is anything like mine, used to be, then the answer is just simply too many. But here's the thing. Even though I knew I wanted to do something about it, I had no idea how. I knew I'd miss something important if I just deleted them all, but I was really tempted to do that. But there's too many just emails to go through at one time. So then I finally learned the secret to reaching inbox zero and taking back my email sanity. It's called Sanebox, and I cannot recommend it enough. Sanebox sorts through your email and moves all the trivial stuff into a different folder, so only messages in your inbox are the ones you actually want to see. Aside from removing all the junk so that you can focus on messages that matter, there's this great feature called the black hole. If you move any email into that folder, and you'll never hear from that sender again. It's just a really good feeling. Because we could all use more organization in our email life, we've worked out a special deal just for you as a listener. Visit sanebox.com/hack right now, and they'll throw in an extra $25 credit on top of the two-week free trial. No credit card information is necessary at all to try it out, unless you decide to buy, so there's actually really nothing to lose, but a whole bunch of sanity to gain. Check it out today and let me know if you love the black hole and reaching inbox zero as much as I do. Again, that's Sanebox, sanebox.com/hack. Go get your 14-day free trial today and your $25 credit will be applied on top of your account. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Kai, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Ooh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I've wanted you to be on this show for quite a while at this time. I'm going to say well over a year. And I don't know why it hasn't happened. And then it finally is. So here we are. And I'm excited.
It's a magical day. The audience should be on the edge of their seats.
They are. I am. So what do you say? Should we jump into it?
Let's do it.
All right. Kai, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Can I cheat and give two answers?
Absolutely. It's not even cheating. That's like giving me double what I asked for.
So the first thing I'd say is I continually invest in my own education. I have a line item budget I use. You need a budget. You need a budget.com to track all my personal finances and personal and business budget. And I have a line item in my budget, educational investments. And every single month I put some months, you know, lean months, the famine months, I might only put $50 or $100 into that account. In the feast months, I might put $200, $300, $400, $500 into that account, but I'm continually saving. So when I see a new course or a book or something on Amazon or an opportunity to have a one-on-one call with somebody, I am able to invest in that education without saying, oh gosh, where do I have to pull from? What do I have to cut? I need to skip dinner with my girlfriend this month. I already have that money budgeted and set aside. So for the last four or so years, that's allowed me to continually invest in my education. And I say that's one of the most important things I've done as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, to make sure that I'm up to date and continually improving my skills. So that's answer number one.
I like that.
Thank you. Answer number two would be sort of like a meta thing. I think of myself first and foremost as a business person, more so than a marketer or a consultant, even though I, let's say, present as a marketer and focus a lot on marketing strategy and tactics and speak to an audience, among others, freelancers and consultants. But at my core, I think of myself as a business person. So one of the things that has led to my business success over the years has been always evaluating new opportunities as they come across my desk and saying, well, is this a quick cash grab opportunity? Do I have the mental bandwidth for that, even if it's outside my positioning or my focus in my business? Is this a lucrative market I should start making a movement towards, be it within my area of focus, my positioning, or not? But I try to evaluate ideas as a businessman first, and then as a freelancer, as a consultant, as whatever sort of niche I'm working in, well, does this make sense within this niche? But that's allowed me to do things like start a eBay business selling iPhones that I'd buy off of Craigslist and flip on eBay, rapidly grow it to around $40,000 a month in revenue, and focus on that business for a bit just because I identified a market opportunity, did a small test, and said, oh, wow, this actually seems to work. I can make a decent profit on each iPhone. How do I scale this? And so previously I'd been working in marketing. Previously I'd been working as a freelancer and a consultant. But this opportunity popped up, I tested it, and I said, this seems like a really good opportunity. Let me continue doing freelancing and consulting, but also spin this up and put some of my primary focus on this business. So I think a lot of my success comes from trying to evaluate opportunities as a business person and even saying, well, I might not yet have the skills to capitalize on this idea, but what's the knowledge difference? How many books, how many courses, how much knowledge do I really need to perform at an average level in this arena? And more often than not, I found it's a lower barrier of entry in terms of knowledge than people often assume. So you want to learn a new topic? Well, read four or five books on that topic, read their references, and you're going to be close to an authority on that topic just from exposing yourself to that information. So at my core, I think of myself as a business person, and I'm incredibly focused on leveling up my knowledge of business and different facets of business.
Wow. There's a lot to sort of unpack, if you will, here, Kai. Mm-hmm. So I love the idea of having the line item that's like literally money you're putting away to be able to further your education. And then, I mean, it really ties in with evaluating business ideas. But let's go back to this business ideas thing, because amongst all these other things that you are doing that I know about, I didn't know about the eBay business. And so you said, is it a cash grab? And then mm-hmm. like, do you have the bandwidth to do it? Does the cash grab, was that like, I couldn't quite tell if that was like a positive or a negative sort of assertion to it.
It's more of a neutral assertion, I'd say. Like, if you, dear listener, dear business owner, are able to identify an opportunity in the market and you say, well, hey, I could switch my attention to this for 3, 6, 12 months and walk away with $10, $20, $50,000 in profit, it might be a short-term cash grab in the sense where the market is not such where you could build a sustainable, durable, long-term business, but you can launch something, make money, get out and say, okay, great. I might not have been focusing on my primary business with my full attention for a short term, but I've increased my war chest by X amount. So I don't see it as a positive or a negative thing. I just see it more of a sort of a meta signal or a quality around the business opportunity. Can this make me a decent amount of money in the short term, even though it would be sacrificing some time and attention spent on my primary focus? Well, if the payoff is there, it really comes down to a cost benefit analysis.
Wow. I like it. I like it a lot. So it's not just a negative thing. The way you said cash grab was like, does he mean this isn't a good thing? But I like that. Being able to assess what it's going to take to and what you'll accomplish, like the return on that investment will be and if it's worth it. Maybe it'll even further what else you want to do because you'll have now sort of funds to do that.
Entirely.
Which isn't a bad thing. Some people, I think, do think of that as maybe a negative thing. Like, but that's not what I want to do. I don't want to just flip phones on eBay for them. Like, that's not my passion project. It's like, mm-hmm. make a bunch of money and let's fund your passion project.
Exactly. And yeah, when I was doing that eBay business, I was still freelancing on the side. I had three, I think, long-term retainer clients that I just sort of continued working with. I wasn't actively marketing my freelancing business, but I still was studying and reading and leveling up in terms of my knowledge there. So I knew there would come a time when I wanted to flip the primary focus back to consulting. And so I made sure I'm leveling up in terms of my knowledge of marketing, my knowledge of consulting as a skill, my whatever I could. So when it came time to make that flip, I was coming back to the consulting game as a better player. I had a better understanding of the mechanics of consulting.
Nice. So can we sort of go back to where, because there's this talk of consulting, having clients, sort of when you sort of started this whole process of finding your own work, being your own boss, being the businessman rather than the person just getting a job.
As my dad says it, he accidentally infected me with the gene of entrepreneurship, and he's very, very, very sorry for it. I come from a line of entrepreneurs on both sides of the family. I think I'm a fourth generation entrepreneur on my mom's side and a third generation on my dad's. My dad owns his own law practice. His father owned two different companies. His father, when he immigrated to the US, owned a company. And so I've always been interested in both the process of making money and the process of delivering value to that other party. So it's another eBay business story, but when I was in high school and then college, I used to play this collectible card game, Magic the Gathering. And I saw that there was a arbitrage market opportunity. I could buy, say, card X for $10 locally, but it was selling for $20 on eBay because the demand was higher globally than it was locally. And I said, huh, if I could buy, you know, a dozen of these cards, okay, great, that's a decent margin. And I just scaled that. And so it wasn't life-changing amounts of money, but for a kid in high school and college, it was like, okay, cool, rent's paid and beer's paid for. This is pretty awesome. So I've always been interested in these different opportunities. My first business venture was really the Magic the Gathering eBay business. And from there, as I started college, I started doing freelance and consulting work on the side, really just figuring it out as I went forward, selling WordPress websites for $15 an hour, zero knowledge of sort of how to present myself as an authority, how to be a trusted advisor to the client. But I was still freelancing and I was still acquiring clients and I still was building up the start of sort of the questions to ask to figure out how to get to being a better freelancer or a better consultant.
So then what's the difference between a freelancer and an entrepreneur in your eyes?
I think an entrepreneur is more a meta classification, like a broader classification. So we could have an entrepreneur in the software space. We could have an entrepreneur in a product space. We could have an entrepreneur selling physical goods, somebody who is starting a business or identifying business opportunities. I am sure Wikipedia and Google can give a much better definition than I can, but in my mind, it's somebody who is focused on identifying a business opportunity and building a business surrounding that opportunity. I'd say a freelancer or a consultant is an entrepreneur, but focused on selling services. So somebody who's selling information products, educational trainings, physical goods through a Shopify store, they're all entrepreneurs, but they may not be practicing the craft of consulting or freelancing. I'd say freelancing and consulting is a sub niche or a subgroup within entrepreneurship as a whole.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And I like that. And I mean, obviously Wikipedia could give us the idea, but it's sort of, to me, it's really a mindset sort of shift. And it's very much sub niches of each or sub categories. Same with like being a tradesperson. Mm-hmm. A plumber to me is like a lot like a freelancer or a drummer who professionally gigs for a living. All those things are very much, it's you creating your own thing, but there's slight nuance differences, but not necessarily. And I like how you sort of, not that you dismiss the question, but it's kind of like, it's almost not important to you. Some people, it's really, truly, like absolutely important and imperative that they're on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do think like there is value in being on one side. And in my heart of hearts, I wish more freelancers and consultants identified as entrepreneurs first and foremost, because I think a trait I see in entrepreneurs that are successful is a willingness to learn new skills. Hey, I found this market opportunity. I don't know how to X, Y, Z. I'm going to go figure it out. And oftentimes in freelancing and consulting spaces, and there are dozens and hundreds and thousands of exceptions to this, but one thing I've seen is a hesitancy to sort of move outside of your specific area of expertise. So if you've been doing PHP development or iOS development, and you say, hey, I see an opportunity over here, but it needs marketing skills. Sometimes, unfortunately, the exploration of that opportunity starts there. Oh, it needs a skill I don't have. I think the entrepreneurial mindset then says, well, hey, what's a cost benefit on acquiring that skill? What's the return on investment? What's the expected value of building a business after investing a week or a month or 2 months in learning the necessary skills here? I really like that as an entrepreneurial trait. I want to see more freelancers and consultants embody that trait, be willing to learn new skills, be willing to launch new service offerings, targeting new markets or their existing market, and being willing to learn the skills to support those service offerings.
And does that ability to want to learn new skills and the ability to sort of grow as a freelancer into entrepreneurship, does that anyway detract from sort of really clearly defining who you are and what you offer?
That's a good question. I'd like to think that it doesn't. So the question you asked, defining who you are and what you offer, I think of that as a positioning or a specialization question. What target market am I looking at? What expensive problem am I focusing on within that market? Do I have that about correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So much better than I did, but yes, absolutely.
So learning new skills, I don't think is necessarily contrary to that principle, because it can allow you to better serve that market or allow you to say, well, I've been focusing on, let's say, an audience of Shopify store owners, and I see this market opportunity over here, but it's with a different target market. Well, okay, there's nothing preventing you from learning that skill, testing it against that market, seeing if you enjoy working with that market and having your business slowly grow and evolve over time. I like to think that positioning is really just a marketing channel. It's not static. It's fluid. It should grow and evolve over time. You start off with your best intention saying, I'm going to serve this market. I'm going to help them solve this problem. But maybe 6 months down the line, you discover for that market, there's a huge expensive problem where they are literally bleeding money and they just desperately need somebody to solve that problem for them. If they're willing to spend thousands, tens of thousands of dollars on a solution, why not acquire the skill to solve that problem? Likewise, you might identify a different target market who has a similar problem to what you solve or a new problem. And you say, wow, these people are really willing to invest in a solution here. Maybe it's time for my business to grow, change focus, choose this new market. Oftentimes when people think about changing positioning or changing their specialization, one worry that comes out is, well, I've spent time building these case studies, building my portfolio, getting testimonials, writing this content. Won't I have to throw it all out? What I've discovered through changing my own positioning about four times over the last 6 years is maybe you have to throw out 10, 15, 20% of your content because it no longer applies, but the rest, your testimonials, your case studies, your authority content, it could be reshaped, it could be reused, or it could just serve as an example of, this is the type of content I create. Yes, it's not for you as an audience, dear reader, but this is an example of what I could create for you. Keep your eyes open for something new down the line. So I think positioning should evolve over time as you identify new opportunities in your existing market or identify new future markets to expand to.
Yeah, and the positioning, but then, I mean, with that idea of, well, I've already invested this time and energy into this market, maybe I shouldn't go there. It's like, it's sunk cost, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You have to reapproach that almost daily to be like, well, yes, but you've already spent that time anyways, irregardless. So if it's better over here and like more market opportunity for you, or it makes you happier, ignore the sunk cost and move past it.
And one amazing thing I've noticed as I've evolved my positioning and sort of mothballed businesses or sort of put them on pause or not actively marketed them is I could always come back to that business, be it a week, a year, 2 years later and say, okay, some of the assets are out of date, but I've learned a lot in the meantime. Let me restart this business. Let me fire up the marketing systems and marketing channels again and start acquiring clients again. So I don't often think about it as completely stopping a business, more stopping the marketing activities for that business. But if you're investing in things like guest articles or podcast guesting, such as this one, you might find you still have a stream of leads for that business. In a previous business, I focused on traffic generation and search engine optimization for Shopify stores. I did a number of podcast interviews on the topic. I still to this day get leads coming to my site for coaching for freelancers and consultants. Hey, we would love to work with you. We run a Shopify store. Here are our details. And it's absolutely wonderful. But even though my positioning doesn't reflect that industry, because I have these marketing channels already built, hey, I was on this episode of this podcast. Somebody archive binges and hears it. They come to me and say, hey, we'd love to work together. So I think there's a lot of durability to some of the marketing systems we can build that makes it such that if we do temporarily shut down a business or shut down a business idea to focus elsewhere, we could come back and say, okay, what assets did I create in the past, be it marketing channels, content, something else that will allow me to jumpstart this business?
Yeah. And do you see, like, let's talk about you and your business that's housed at KaiDavis.com. Is branding part of your positioning?
That's a good question.
Or whatever branding is, but like the image you put forth, that's why I wanted to get into this, because it's very in your face. Like it's very much you take a stand on things and people either, I think, would love it or hate it.
And that's very intentional on my part. I think of it more as personality coming through than branding, but I think it's the same thing.
Personality is a way better word. Yeah.
Yeah. About a year ago, I made the decision that I wanted to have sort of more of an authentic self shine through. Not that I was holding back too much, but I wasn't allowing myself to fully explore what does Kai's personality look like if I say I just want it to shine through. And as I've done that, I've started doing things like sending out daily emails to my list. So every day my subscribers get an email on freelancing and consulting and how to get more clients. And this has provided a wonderful opportunity to let my personality come through, tell stories, share anecdotes, share lessons, and people have responded really, really well. What I've noticed is the more I put my personality into a project, the more I let it shine through. It either has a super positive effect for some people. Oh my gosh, I love what you're saying. I love your personality. I want to follow you. And I'm like, that's wonderful. And some people are like, you are not my jam. This just doesn't fit for me. And I'm also like, my main philosophy is I either want people to have a strongly positive reaction or a strongly negative reaction to my personality or what I'm presenting. I don't like falling into that middle ground, that sort of neutral position of like, yeah, it's okay. Because I know if I hit that point, I have failed. I want to evoke a strong reaction, either on the positive side, this is amazing, I want to be a subscriber, I want to read more, how could we hang out, let's have a call, or a negative reaction, hey, this isn't for me, I'm going to unsubscribe. And I don't view people who say, hey, this isn't for me in any negative way. I think that's perfect. They're self-selecting out, which means I'm left with people who say, oh, wow, I love your writing, I love working with you, I love what you're producing and putting out there. And I found letting my personality shine through, letting my personality be a part of my writing, be a part of the content I'm creating, has helped me create that strong emotional reaction. And people who respond very positively, they tell their friends, subscribers go up. People who respond negatively, that's perfectly fine. If they are not a fan of my personality or what's coming through in my letters, they most likely aren't going to want to work with me in a larger capacity. So I see injecting my personality, having it be a large part of my writing, having it shine through whenever it can, as a huge asset.
Wow. And so a year ago, you started doing this.
A year ago, I sort of made that conscious decision. And then it was a few months of like, well, what does this look like? How do I have this happen? And it was probably about 6 months ago that I really started to inject it into my writing. I think I've been doing daily emails now for just about 6 months. And it really was writing daily and publishing daily to my list that helped me discover, A, what is the personality there? And B, how do I want to express it and how people respond to it? And so I see it sort of as an iterative give and take. As I've written more, as I've started publishing daily, people respond and say, hey, we love this. And I'm like, okay, I want to head in that direction a little more. People might respond back and be like, yeah, this is okay, but not so great. I might not head in that direction as much, but it's really a sort of a conversation or a dance with the readership or the audience. Hey, I released this article or my personality comes through in this way. How do people respond? I think one amazing example of the strength that could come out of this is I'm going to Burning Man this summer, and I decided I'm going to email my mailing list, and I'm going to say I'm going to Burning Man. Getting tickets is very hard. Would any of you like to raise your hands and help buy tickets for my Burning Man camp? We're going to need 50 of them. And I think I had something like 40 people, some people I'd never met before in real life, raise their hands and say, yes, we will help you buy tickets. And we ended up getting all the tickets we needed within, I think, the first hour of the sale. And it was absolutely amazing. Could I have expected that a year or 2 years ago when I was emailing my list once a week or once every other week? I don't really think so. I think it's because I'm showing up in people's inboxes every day, sharing something relevant, sharing something valuable, telling an interesting story. When I said, hey, does anybody want to get involved with this? Do you want to take part in this story? People said, heck yes, I do. And said, how could I help support this? Okay, great. Tell me how to buy the tickets. And it turned into a very, very fun sort of community event within my mailing list.
So I get anxious, like this weird feeling in my stomach, Kai, just thinking about having to create something really, like write something really damn good for my email list every single day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you deal with this at all? Or is like, that's a huge amount of not just like actually sitting down and writing and putting the time in, but like, it's a mental thing. Like, you've got to, like, will this run dry? Well, and I know that the whole, like, it's a muscle and all that kind of stuff. But thinking that maybe, what if I only provide real good value 4 days a week? Like, will people just leave before they get to the good stuff or any of that nonsense that goes through our head? How do you deal with this?
Excellent, excellent question. What I've discovered is, I think as content creators, we put a little too much pressure on us to always have like the A+ level of an article, when the truth is most of our articles are going to be average. That is how math works. We are going to trend towards the average. And when I recognized that, it allowed me to start publishing more frequently and say, well, I might feel this article is only at 60 or 70% of a very good article, but I'm going to hit send anyways, because if I'm able to publish this, it means I can move on to the next article and the next thing I'm working on. rather than getting hung up on it. And what I've discovered is my internal perception of what a good article is very different than my audience's. There was one article I wrote sort of as a throwaway end of the day. I was in a coffee shop. It was 4 p.m. I'm like, oh, I'm exhausted. I need to publish my daily email. And so I wrote an article about the levels of consulting. What does it mean to start out? What does it mean to be a 100 level, 200, 300, or a 400 level consultant? How do you grow? In my mind was a throwaway piece. Here's an interesting concept. Okay, we're done. Mic drop for the day. It was the most, not impactful, but the, oh, what's the word? It generated the most responses of anything I've written to my mailing list. I have people replying to that email even today saying, when are you going to write more on this topic? And so it's fascinating for me to see what I judge as a high quality article sometimes doesn't get that response. It's, well, okay, that was a good one. What I judge as a so-so article sometimes gets an amazing response, a very powerful response. And so that realizing that helped remove some of the weight from my shoulders. And I also realized as I write more, people are going to understand, hey, there are some days where it's a great letter, some days where it's a so-so letter. And the people who say, well, Kai, you sent me a so-so letter, I'm going to click on subscribe. Blessings to them. They aren't the people for me. They aren't going to be the readers who want to read my letters. The other people will say, okay, great. Yeah, you know, it wasn't a great article, but sometimes they aren't great articles. Let's wait for Monday's or the next day's article and see what Kai writes about then. And so there is a slow pruning effect that happens, but I always think of it as sort of a strengthening of the list. People who aren't a good match, either for the personality or the content, filter themselves out. And the rest are people who say, oh, I really do enjoy your articles. In terms of my workflow for writing, I had that same worry about, well, what happens when the well runs dry, or how do I decide what to write about? What I started doing is actively surveying my list. Whenever somebody signs up, the confirmation page where you usually see, hey, make sure to drag this email to the inbox from the promotions tab. I said, that's good. And that's an optimization people could make. I'm going to put a survey up. And so when anybody signs up for my list, the first thing they see is, thanks so much. You know, your bonus is on the way. Two questions for you. What's your number one question about freelancing or consulting right now? What can I do to help you? And so whenever people sign up for my list, about 30 to 40% of people fill out the survey. And so I'm continually getting a stream of questions from new people about freelancing and consulting. I'm able to take those and then say, okay, I have to write a letter for today. Let's see what the latest questions are. Ooh, this one's interesting. Write 500 to 750 words on it, publish it as a daily. And so it's made it a much more smooth workflow. I'm continually getting new input from my readers about what they want to hear about. I'm able to turn those into short, actionable articles and then move on to the next day. Am I explaining that well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the survey. And I don't know how long I've been on your list for, but it's been quite a while. And so I remember seeing the survey, but at the same time, not thinking of it as in, this is just feeding him article ideas. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. So as a workflow, how far in advance are you sort of like pre-written or backlogged?
I try to keep a backlog of around 2 weeks, so 10 articles at minimum.
Wow.
I burned through a bit of it because I had some illness right when I got back. Allergies hit me hard. And so I was pulling from the backlog. And so the backlog's down to about 2 or 3 days right now. Because I'm going to be out of state for Burning Man for about 3 weeks, one of the projects over the next 3 weeks is basically write 2 articles in place of every 1 article. So I'm able to rebuild that backlog and have my dailies go out. Even if I'm in Gerlach, Nevada somewhere out in the desert, that there's still the continuation of the daily emails for my list. But by sort of reducing the scope of the content and saying each article only needs to be a single idea, a single concept, a single solution to a problem somebody is asking, or a single answer to a question, it's allowed me to have a more laser focus on each article, take it to the next level, and make sure it's actionable for the reader. What I found is often when writing, I'll come across 2 or 3 other ideas and want to start writing about them. My workflow is to always have a yellow legal pad next to me. So rather than switching context to OmniFocus or my task manager to capture that idea, I could just write an article about this topic, and then at the end of the day, process that back into my content planner. So I don't need to switch focus. I could just focus on writing an actionable short article for my readers, getting it out there as soon as possible.
I love it. And you publish to your website at the same time as the email goes out?
I try to. I'm about a month behind. That's one part of my workflow that definitely needs a bit of tender love and care. But most often what I do is do a dump of my emails from the last month, import them into WordPress, and then schedule them to drip a new one out every day. So the website content occasionally lags around a month behind the email list content, but I don't see that as necessarily a problem. The content on the site is still evergreen. It's still a valuable resource. And I take the view that the goal of the website, the job to be done in a sense, is show people relevant content and present them with a call to action to join the mailing list. The mailing list really is the inside of the club. It's where the cool stuff happens. The website's job is to be the hype man for the club. Hey, you really want to be on the email list. You want to get these bonuses. You want to get the daily email from Kai. And so I view it all as being a flow to get people on the email list. And the email list is something that I almost treat as a community. I want to engage in a back and forth with readers. I sent out an email a few weeks ago. You might have seen this one, subject line, classified secret project. And the body was reply back if you're interested. I got 100 replies to that email. My inbox was overwhelmed. And I responded back, let people know what the secret project was, got more replies. And I love that because it's transformed what used to be a broadcast system, my email list, into really a conversational system where it's a community. Even if people aren't engaging with each other, but just engaging with me, it's given it a much better feeling of being an interactive community where people are encouraged to respond, encouraged to give feedback, encouraged to disagree with something I say in an article. And all of this leads to me having a better understanding of what people are looking for and the challenges they're facing and how they're working on growing their business.
And then a year into it, has eventually all of this led to more clients, more profit, more revenue, whatever you want to talk about?
It has. The KPI, the key performance indicator I track for my email list, is revenue generated per email. Beyond open rate, beyond click-through rate, beyond number of subscribers, I'm looking at email and saying, well, for my list in the month of July, how much revenue did that generate? How much revenue per subscriber did that generate? And often when I send an email, if that email resonates well with the readers, I'll say, okay, let me rearrange my schedule or write something else on that same topic because of that previous email, that first email generated sales. Let me continue that energy. Let me write again on that topic and see if the second email on that topic continues to generate sales. So it has increased revenue. It has increased the number of clients I work with. It has increased the number of coaching students I work with to help them grow their business. I really advocate it. It's been a wonderful way to both better understand what freelancers and consultants are experiencing and doing, share my knowledge, share information, share resources, build those relationships, and then see those relationships turn into customer relationships.
I love it. I love it. I love that it's all community and all those things and the relationships. And then, but there's the KPI of revenue per email, because in every email you link to at least one product or service for sale.
Yes. Yes, I do.
And so based on that feedback you're getting from people in the surveys and then sort of the community you built around the newsletter, is that what defines or determines, I should say, what products and services you're offering?
Very much so. That passive questionnaire at the start, questionnaires I'll give to people while they're on the list just about topics. I sent one out about 3 months ago asking for questions people had about writing emails to clients. And I got 50 or 60 people filling out this multiple question survey. And that gave me an arsenal of information when it comes to creating a product on writing better emails. And so I'm constantly using the information I'm collecting and gathering in the conversations I'm having, the 30 by 500 sales safari method, to understand, well, these are the pains and problems people are having. These are the issues they're having. What product can I create or what solution can I present, free or paid, that will help them solve some aspect or the entirety of this problem? So it very much directs my product creation and service offering directions.
I love it. Can you specify what this 30 by 500 sales safari is for the listener?
Oh, absolutely. 30 by 500 is a course by Amy Hoy on how to create information products that sell. And it's very, very focused on market research. And one component of it that she's given a webinar about and talks about on her blog, Stacking the Bricks, is Sales Safari. Going out into the wild and studying your target market, understanding the pains and problems that they have, and then coming up with product ideas that solve those pains and problems. So instead of saying, hey, I made a thing, let me see if people will buy the thing, it's, okay, I found my market. These are the problems the market has. Let me create a solution for the problems I've already identified. And what I found is by following this methodology for my consulting business and for my product business, it's allowed me to better create products that people are wallet out, eager to buy. I'm developing solutions that people are already saying, gosh, I wish I could pay money for a solution to this problem. Hey, great, here's the solution. Would you like to pay money for it? It's made it much easier to create products that actually do sell.
Very well said. Very well said. Stackingthebricks.com is by Amy Hoy. And speaking of people who have very much like put their line in the sand as this is me and my personality and it comes through in everything and either love it or hate it, she's definitely one of them. I got to meet her briefly actually a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wonderful.
In Toronto at a small event, and it was really cool. So, Kai, this has been an absolute blast, but we do have to wrap up. So I'd love it if I could just wrap up with one final question for you.
Of course.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. Seems to be this gap we live in after talking to hundreds of entrepreneurs and freelancers from all positions in the world and places in business. But there seems to be this place we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers sort of, where we're always projecting our own personal success or how we see personal success into the future. Meaning in 1 month when you hit that revenue KPI that you want, or in 6 months when you get to stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, you and I both kind of know, Kai, that seconds before you hit that goal, there's going to be 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future, which I agree we need to push forward. But for right now, Kai, I would love it if we could stop looking forward and look back. I would love it if you could stop, turn around, look behind you. You've been on this sort of wacky freelance entrepreneurship journey for quite some time now, and I'm sure there's been highs, lows, wins, and losses. But tell me how you feel about the whole thing up until today.
I absolutely love it. I love that I get to create products that help people. I love that I get to help people through coaching. I love that I get to work from my home office and build an interesting business. It's a delight. I mean, when people used to ask me in high school what I wanted to do, the answer was be a consultant, be an entrepreneur, run my own business. And I feel so lucky that I've been able to build a business that does that. If my business stayed in the shape and form it is now for the next 20 years, I'd honestly be happy with it. One of the sort of philosophies I'm coming around to is growth for growth's sake isn't necessary. So I look back and say, wow, it's wonderful that I'm 31. I've been able to build this business and I'm able to have fun and love doing it and go on crazy adventures while I do it. What more could I ask for than that? I've started to say it's not necessary for continual year over year growth. If my business is stable for the next 5, 10, 20 years, that sounds fun. That sounds delightful.
It's awesome. Beautiful answer, man. So, Kai, we've got to talk about your business. We've got to talk about your email. Now, if you could, please, could you specifically tell the listener who it's for exactly and where they can track down the newsletter and your presence online?
Absolutely. So the newsletter is a daily email for freelancers and consultants, though I have a number of employees, business owners, entrepreneurs on there who enjoy the content. It's focused on strategies to get more clients without spending more on marketing. And you could sign up for my daily email newsletter at kaidavis.com. That's KAIDAVIS.com. And I'm focused on helping my readers learn how to grow a better business, learn how to grow a better freelancing and consulting business. And if you sign up today, you'll be guaranteed to get tomorrow's lesson.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. So kaidavis.com is where to find it. I'll link to that in the show notes for you, as well as Kai. You spend quite a bit of time on Twitter, and that's Kai S. Davis, I believe. So K-A-I-S Davis on Twitter. But I will also link to that in the show notes so people can track you down, start to see your personality, see if it fits there. If they want to sort of dip their toe in the Kai Davis waters first.
Oh, the Twitter is full of the personality. I think my bio right now is your real internet boyfriend. Retweets and likes are sects. So I let the personality come through hard on the Twitter.
That's good. It's good. I like it. I like it a lot. So I'll link to that as well. If you want to track him down and ask him more questions, you can do that there or via the email newsletter, as well as I'm going to track down some Stacking the Bricks for you if you want to dip your toes into that water as well. Kai, thanks again, man, for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. I really do appreciate it. And please, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome to watch.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me on the show. And to the listeners, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode. Thank you.
If you are ready to get control of the madness that is your email inbox, then you're ready to try SaneBox. Luckily for you, right now, if you go to sanebox.com/hack, you will get a 14-day free trial plus an exclusive $25 credit applied to your account if you decide to upgrade. But for free right now, go to sanebox.com/hack. Yeah. We went a lot of interesting places with that conversation. I wouldn't say we jumped around, but we covered a lot of ground and it was a lot of fun. But there's one thing we didn't do, which we're going to do right now. We're going to find that one thing that Kai said. You ready? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
if you, dear listener, dear business owner, are able to identify an opportunity in the market and you say, well, hey, I could switch my attention to this for 3, 6, 12 months and walk away with $10, $20, $50,000 in profit, it might be a short-term cash grab in the sense where the market is not such where you could build a sustainable, durable, long-term business, but you can launch something, make money, get out and say, okay, great. I might not have been focusing on my primary business with my full attention for a short term, but I've increased my war chest by X amount.
And that's the hack. Kai. This is good. I love this. So this idea of not necessarily always having to focus on the main thing that you want to do for, say, the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Because we do talk about that, like finding that thing that you are willing to put 10 years of your time in. But also realize you have to make money, right? We all have mortgages to pay, rent to pay, food to eat, travel expenses, whatever it happens to be, we have to make money. That's quite obvious. But sometimes we default if we come out of working in the corporate world or just working for other people in that mindset. When we start to get our back up against the wall and we need to make money, we think about going and getting a job. So Kai, I love this discussion. He doesn't really frame it this way necessarily, but he does talk about finding an opportunity in the marketplace that could take you 3, 6, 9, 12 months to capitalize on, which means to turn that idea into value in exchange for money and make 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 grand, whatever it happens to be, and then roll that, as he says, your war chest. That's now your money to use to build out the product or the service or the business that you really want to focus on. This is really a crucial mindset sort of shift. Rather than going back and thinking that you can work for somebody else, it's to look for ideas of things that you could capitalize on. Things that are quick and can work. Not like get rich quick, but I just mean things that you don't necessarily need to be so passionate about that you need to follow through for the next 5 years. There will be opportunities that come to you if you're open to them and think about them in this way. And don't think of it as, well, I'm good. I don't want to spend all my time in that business. Think of it as a short-term fix, and you're going to learn a ton because you are going to create a small, quick business out of it. And so you learn a ton from it, and then that's going to roll you into the next thing and the next thing. It's something we cover a lot on the show, is going back through sort of people's histories of how they ended up where they are and with the business that they're at. It usually comes from 2 or 3 or 4 other businesses that sort of roll and evolve into, like, even if they're completely different, it's kind of like you take that skill set or the people you've met and that, and you move it to the next one and the next one. And then you end up with the business that you actually want. Kai, thank you very, very much. So there we are. We've made it through, and I hope that you are inspired or you picked up something that is going to propel you forward or is just making your mind race with possibilities. But you could also be like a lot of people in your position and have these ideas or have the idea or just don't know what to do next. You're just stuck on one tiny thing. This is a common theme amongst us as entrepreneurs, us as people who want to create things. And I've created very small consulting packages called the In-N-Out Coaching Service to help you. 30 minutes, get on the phone with me or get onto Skype. I'll record the call so you have it to listen to after, but I'll fix what it is that's sticking you. I'll answer your questions, or I will put you in touch with the people who can get you moving with what you need to get moving on. Go to hacktheentrepreneur.com. You'll see at the top, work with us. There's a consulting or coaching plan right up there, and you can check it out. I believe it's like $125 for 30 minutes recorded conversation, and we can have it within the next 24 to 48 hours to really get you moving quickly. If you're stuck on something that just is hanging you up, but you know on the other side lies big, cool, fun things, check it out. Go to hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's been fun. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Kai. The show notes will also be on the website for you with links for a whole bunch of stuff that we've talked about in this conversation, including Kai Davis. The Double Your Audience I'll find the founder of Double Your Audience. Brennan Dunn was his name. He was on the show years ago. I'll find his link for you because he's excellent, smart entrepreneur that I think you could learn a lot from, as well as just a few other things we talked about. They'll all be there for you on the site when you're ready. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.